I think for trail runners as well, we feel like we're not accomplishing anything physiologically if we don't push ourselves just a little bit. We always just want to be hurting so bad. And what the pros are really good at is being comfortably uncomfortable. I think amateurs want to be completely uncomfortable. But you can do more work if you're comfortably uncomfortable. You are improving when you're running easy.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on virtual trail runs with interesting guests. And boy, we have one today. He's going to teach us some great tactics on how to reach our potential and hopefully make you a better human being.
Today, we're talking to Coach Ben Rosario, who teaches pro athletes how to run faster, and he's going to teach us something too.
This episode is brought to you in part by Jonji, our partners at Jonji. And boy, if you go to their website, jonji.com, they have something for everybody.
And as trail runners, we like to do things that are different. We like different distances. We like adventure runs. We like to meet up with friends and do a completely different route. We also like new gear. That's probably one of our favorite things, Scott. And new gear, I think Jonji, because they have great selection.
They have a lot of different collections. They have new run caps. They have their artist series, which we've talked about, which are just really cool prints from around the world. They have accessories, everything that you really need or want.
And it fits good and looks good. So if you want to look good and you want to feel good and you want to run good, you want to run in Jonji.
And if you want to show up your running pals, show up with Jonji gear, because you'll be the best looking runner out there. You may not be the fastest, but you're going to be the best looking. Go to jonji.com. Use the code TRN15 for 15% off. InsideTracker.com. Boy, we have loved this company, haven't we, Freeman?
Well, there's a good reason, because it tells us what's going on the inside. Our watch tells us what's going on the outside, but how do you know what's going on the inside, Scott?
You go to Inside Tracker. You select a plan from their website. They send someone out to your house or to your work, and they draw blood. And then they tell you all of the biomarkers that are important for endurance athletes. They could just leave it there, and that'd be worth the money. But they take it the next step, and they help create a plan for you to improve, and then help you keep accountable to that plan.
You know what I selected, Scott? I said, I want to be faster and feel younger. And they had a plan for that. Well, kind of they did. They said, Freeman, you need to improve in these areas. And they send me out messages to make sure that I'm doing those things, which is really nice. It's accountability. It's a health coach.
Go to InsideTracker.com, or better yet, go to TrailRunnerNation.com. Click on the deal banner at the top. Click on the Inside Tracker, and you get 20% off any of those plans. InsideTracker.com. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman. And today's topic, we're talking about five things pros are doing that maybe we should too. You may think back a couple of weeks ago, we talked to Matt Fitzgerald about the book Run Like a Pro, Even If You're Slow. And now we have the co-author that helped Matt with this, Ben Rosario.
Ben is head coach and executive director of the Hoka Northern Arizona Elite Team, or the NAZ Elite. That's where you can find him, at nazelite.com. He's coached everyone from third graders to beginner adults to professional athletes, a world Olympic champions. And he has just a wealth of knowledge. He's a Division II All-American at Truman State University and became the youngest qualifier for the 2004 Olympic Trials Marathon. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Matt told me that this was a really fun podcast to be on. So, you know, you've come highly recommended.
Right on.
We'll get with our accountant and send the check, Matt.
Hey, so Ben's been asked to come with five, and we just learned he may have more than five. It just depends how things move along. But at home, you might keep track of some of these five. How many are you doing, and how many can you do? If you're already doing all five, congratulations. If you're not doing any of the five, again, congratulations, because that means you can implement those into your training regime. So I'm looking forward to get started and seeing if I can learn something.
One of the things that we learned talking to Matt is a lot of times we see some training plans, or we hear training plans, or we read in magazines about these pro athletes and the gigantically huge miles they do, and the two-a-days and the five-a-days and the massive training that they do. And we can get a little intimidated by that. What Matt did was pull the curtain back a little bit and said, you know what? there's a lot of stuff that the pros are doing that if we incorporate, and when I say we, us recreational runners, when we can pull back, we can use some of their strategies and actually attain a higher potential than what we would do if we were just to go out and run the same pace, same miles, same trail, same everything. So Ben, when you're coaching someone that is just a recreational runner, what is the main thing that you like to improve with their training?
Well, I think that I want to figure out what their goals are first. Mm-hmm. You know, what do they want to accomplish? And let's just assume or imagine that their number one goal is just simply to improve. And I say that because it sounds simple, but it really should be everybody's goal. It's just to improve. I mean, the pros at the most basic level, that's what they're trying to do is improve. And I think what you said a second ago about getting intimidated by some of the big sexy things that the pros do, 100-mile weeks or some of the really fast paces they do in training, I think sometimes we amateurs use that as a cop-out to just dismiss everything and say, well, we could never do what they do. That's a whole different thing. But the reason I think that's a cop-out is, you know, look, if they're trying to improve and you're trying to improve, well, already that's a pretty big commonality. So there must be some overlap, some things that we can learn from them, some things that they're doing to improve that we could also do. And yeah, let's forget about the big sexy numbers. Let's talk about the non-sexy stuff, right? Let's talk about nutrition. You know, let's talk about sleep. Let's talk about recovery, things like that. Because if you're dismissing those things, I think you're doing yourself a disservice because those sorts of things are actually vital to the improvement of pros and they can be vital to your improvement. I'm happy to start with any of those if you're interested in one of those particular topics.
Yeah, well, let's jump into one of those. I'm interested in the one that you're thinking about first. How's that? And what I'm hearing is we can even become better runners without even putting on our shoes. There's some things around running that we can do to become better. Let's start with one of those.
I purposefully started with those because I don't care how talented you are, you can do better about sleep. I'll start with sleep.
Yeah.
Sleep is when the body recovers. Sleep is when the body absorbs all the training that you've been doing. And without it, we cannot get the most out of ourselves. And without it, we're not taking advantage of the running that we're doing, basically. And the way I describe sleep to the amateur runner, to the pro runner, to anybody is first, getting us all on the same page. Let's admit that sleep is good. Okay, if we can admit that, if we can acknowledge that, we're all on the same page there, then you start saying, okay, well, can I do better with sleep? And how can I do better? Well, right off the top, I always encourage people to examine their nighttime routine. And if your nighttime routine involves the last hour of your evening, hour and a half, 2 hours of your evening, is scrolling on your phone or watching garbage television or reality television, whatever, I would advise you or I would encourage you to see if you can cut that down. Because a lot of that is really unnecessary and in fact can hurt your sleep because it's not recommended to have so much screen time right before bed anyway. So if you're someone who stays up till 11 p.m., let's say, and that last hour and a half is stuff that you don't really need in your life, see if you can cut it back to 9:30. Can you imagine? Can you imagine an extra hour and a half of sleep every single night? Mm-hmm. Let's just say at least 5 days a week, every week, all year. Do the math on that, right? How much extra sleep is that? And so that's my first thing with sleep is just kind of doing a little self-assessment and realizing, hey, I could probably do a better job. And then, you know, the second thing, or maybe I already said it, is just acknowledging how important it is and just making it a part of your routine, trying to get better sleep.
So Coach Ben, tell us, give us a look behind this curtain, since we've used that term before. How many of your pro athletes need a bit more sleep? It's one of the things that you advise them to do, they try it, and all of a sudden, things get better.
Well, some of them are incredible. They do an incredible job, so I don't really have any advice for them. But most of them could use more. I mean, we could almost all use more. And I think the key is routine, if you can accomplish it, you know, in your life. And the body craves consistency. One of the things that I've told some folks over the years is to make sure that they go to bed at the same time every night. The body will start to get better sleep if you can go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time. You know, one of the things that I think amateurs do wrong sometimes is they love to sleep in on the weekend, which is understandable. But it's not necessarily the greatest for the body, because if you sleep in, then you're likely to go to bed later that night, same thing the next night, and then it's hard to get back into the routine on Sunday night. And pros do that too. The other thing I have to tell pros sometimes is actually to – this is going to sound annoying to amateurs, but is to actually cut back on their naps, meaning, look, if you're really tired after a workout, don't sleep for 2.5 hours. You know, that's going to make it harder to go to bed at night on time. Sleep for a half hour, set an alarm, and wake up. Yes, you need naps, and I like naps for pros, and I like naps for anybody if they can get them. But it's, again, it's a matter of staying in the right rhythm. And, you know, a gigantic 2-3 hour nap one day can lead to you getting out of rhythm the next day. So it's just rhythm, rhythm, rhythm.
Is it a coincidence that you're based in Arizona, one of the few smart states in the union that doesn't bow to daylight savings time to mess up that sleep cycle?
It is nice not having daylight savings time. I mean, we never change our clocks, so that's really nice. That does throw you off for sure. So I don't envy those in the other states.
When we were talking to Matt, we used the term recreational runner. And I've got to say that I've had, and this was a few weeks back, and I'm glad you're coming to the table with a new term. You're calling us amateur runners, which I can deal with. That is a term that feels fine. But the recreational kind of rubbed us the wrong way. And I don't think I was alone on that. And I even think a few listeners might have been shaking their head along the way too. But I like your term amateur runner. So thank you. I'm going to hold on to that and not feel as bad. It's kind of like calling us a jogger instead of a runner, those kinds of things. They're just terms of endearment.
I'm with you. I actually, and I prefer professional athlete for an athlete who actually makes their living off of running as opposed to elite. I think elite is probably a bigger bucket of people, whereas professionals, it's really only a select few.
Thank you for starting this episode out this way. I love the fact that we're going to find out how to be better runners by actually not lacing up our shoes initially. And sleep, I think, is a great one. We've done some episodes before on sleep. I think that's one of Don's favorite topics. What do you think is the next step? I think you mentioned nutrition. Are professional runners better eaters than us amateurs? As I drink a Diet Coke?
Some are. I think today, especially, pro runners take their nutrition a lot more seriously than the athletes I competed against back in the early 2000s. You know, there's just more information out. I think as a society, we understand a little bit better about the importance of nutrition. It doesn't mean we all abide by that knowledge, but or do anything with that knowledge. But we know that you need to have a balanced diet. You need to be eating the rainbow. You need to be eating carbohydrates, proteins. You need to get fruits and vegetables. I'll say this, and Matt does a good job explaining this. What the pros do probably better than amateurs is they don't actually follow any quote unquote diet. They just eat, you know? They just eat. And they eat a little bit of everything. And they eat kind of all the time. And so they're constantly fueling. And you know that old term, furnace will burn anything if it's hot enough? Meaning, if you're training really hard, you could drink your Diet Coke and you can eat your microwave burritos and you can have your greasy fries and all those things. And that's true to an extent. But I think what the pros do well is they know that that is true, but it runs better on premium, right? And so, yeah, you're eating all kinds of good stuff that tastes really good, but you're just aware that the good foods are better. What the pros do well is it's less of what not to eat and what to eat. So nowadays, I think the pros see food as fuel. They're excited about what kind of foods they're eating and what kind of foods they're putting in. They're very rarely worried about what not to do. And so many of the fad diets are concerned with what not to do. And I think you should flip it. I think it's a healthier approach to eating, like what to eat, not what not to eat. And that's what the amateurs probably get wrong. They focus so much on what not to eat. Let's focus on what we should eat.
If you could overhaul someone's nutrition and let's say they have the typical American diet. I don't know what that is, but let's say it's not it's not great. And you could say, you know what, we're gonna put good whole foods, good, you know, natural, nutrient dense fruits and vegetables and good carbohydrates. How much do you think that could improve their potential? Is it incremental? Is it like 1 or 2%, or could it be 10% or more?
Oh, it could definitely be 10% or more.
Wow.
Depending on how poor their diet is currently. There's no question. In fact, think about it just from a, not even a running perspective, but some of the documentaries you've seen, like Super Size Me, right? Mm-hmm. How terrible he felt during that month where all he ate was fast food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Just the way you feel, the energy level you have. If you, let's say you're someone who's done a dry January where you don't drink alcohol for a whole month, but to be honest, it's less about the alcohol, more about the idea of this dry January being this really healthy month where you just think about what you're eating and you try to do a really good job of fueling, you tend to feel a lot better. And so, yeah, I think there can be massive improvements, and it helps with digestion. It helps with sleep. The better you're eating, the better your body functions overall. And that, of course, includes running.
Yeah, it's just not the body weight that you have to carry around, but it's the inflammatory process of eating all the simple sugars and trying to recover from hard workouts and having these metabolites in you that are slowing the recovery and making you feel lethargic and not motivated to get out there and not push the extra because you feel heavy and sluggish. Mm. And I imagine it probably make you stay up late and scroll through TikTok.
Don, it's true. It's absolutely true. I mean, it's just, there's no question about it. And I feel bad even talking about it because it's not something I do well in my own life. So it's kind of one of those classic coach do as I say, not as I do kind of things. But, you know, it's funny because I think the day is coming where I'm going to have to deal with this in my own life, because as you get older, you have to. And I hate feeling lethargic. I was always someone who had just a lot of natural energy. And now I'm the classic American, you know, have to have my coffee or I can't function. And I never used to be like that. So I really should be taking my own advice here. Don, what you just said is so true. And that lethargic feeling is no fun. And so let's get our energy back, huh?
I like it. I think we should all collectively agree to do that now. I think that's good. Let's turn back the time just a bit, and let's have Coach Ben look at old runner Ben. Mm. And would you have coached him, your old runner Ben, to change sleep or nutrition? And you don't have to be too critical. You don't have to, you know, call yourself out. But would you have corrected things now that you've learned from working with all these athletes? Would you change something to runner Ben?
Nutrition, definitely. I always valued sleep. I valued sleep all the way going back to high school to the detriment of my grades. But I really would have eaten better. Yeah. You know, it goes back to what I was talking about a second ago. I wasn't viewing food as fuel. I just didn't get into it, you know? And well, I didn't have a lot of money either, so that was part of it. I thought, okay, I'm having mac and cheese tonight. I'll put tuna in it so I can have some protein. And it's just boxed mac and cheese is too processed. You know, it's not easy to digest. It's not good for the system. A much better meal of a similar, you know, still getting carbs, still getting protein would have been a more natural pasta with vegetables on the side, some lean chicken, maybe a little bit of fruit for dessert. Then I'm getting everything. Not only was that tuna and mac and cheese processed and not good for me in that way, but it wasn't enough. I need to be supplementing. I need to be having fruits. I need to be having vegetables. And, you know, I just grew up in a kind of a lower middle class household. And that's kind of the way we ate, you know, spaghetti, frozen pizza, mac and cheese, chicken nuggets. And I just never stopped eating that way. And that would have made a difference for me. There's no question about it. I really believe that.
But you still ran a 4:03 mile despite that.
Back in the day, that wasn't too bad. And I ran 2:18 in the marathon, and that wasn't too bad back in the day. And so I had some range. But no, I could have done better. For sure, I could have done better. I'm not living in fantasy land. I don't know that it would have made a gigantic difference in my performance overall. But I think I would have felt better on a daily basis. I would have had some better workouts. I think I would have performed better overall. Whether I would have broken my PBs or not, I don't know. But I do think I would have run better overall.
All this talk about nutrition has brought up something that my wife has taught me. She read it somewhere and it's brilliant. Instead of being restrictive in your diet, that whole mindset, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, and woe is me, I wish I could have that. She focuses on, and she makes a list of this daily, trying to eat 30 different fruits or vegetables every week. And it's kind of a challenge. We go to the grocery store, instead of getting the same vegetables or the same fruits, we're opening up this adventure of trying new things. I had Brussels sprouts. I hated Brussels sprouts as a kid. So it just kind of opens things up and changes your mindset from a restrictive diet to really opening yourself up to the world of what's out there.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. That's exactly what I'm talking about, getting creative with it. And I'll just end the nutrition thing by saying this. We can get hooked on the right things just as easily as we can get hooked on the wrong things. And I do remember the one thing I do pretty well is I don't drink soda. And when you stop drinking soda and you hold off on it for a month or two or three, you never crave it anymore. It's not really good for you, you know? And when you replace soda with whatever healthier drink you might replace it with, you start craving that. The body's kind of crazy that way. It's the same. Think about different cultures across the world. People who've never had a McDonald's hamburger never crave a McDonald's hamburger. They crave whatever, you know, people in Kenya crave ugali. That's a really healthy dish. That's what they eat, you know? And so you can reteach yourself to crave the good just as easily as over time you've created a situation where you crave the bad.
I like to change a mindset, you know, looking for things and reprogramming, kind of hitting the reset and giving time to pass a bit before you make the decision whether this is your new path. You know, you need to stick with it a while so that you can curve those old cravings and move into your new one. So I think patience is needs to happen with this change. So thanks for that.
If you don't mind, before we lace up the shoes, I want to talk about something that two things that I really don't like to do. And it's ironic because it's in high school, I loved strength training. I was in the gym all the time because I was playing football and skiing and stuff like that. But I don't do strength training. I don't think enough. Do the pros do a lot of strength training? And then the second question that's kind of related to that, because Don likes me to ask multiple questions. He's always saying you need to ask multiple questions, is stretching, strength training and stretching. Do the pros do that? And do we need to do that as amateurs?
Yes and yes.
Dang it. I didn't want that.
But here's the fun thing about strength training, what we've learned over the years about strength training for runners is a lot more fun than we used to think. You know, we used to think that, oh, we're a runner, so we should be lifting really light weights. We shouldn't be lifting with our legs. We let our running train our legs. We should just do some light upper body work, lots of reps, that kind of thing. And that's not really all that fun. The lifting you were describing in high school is actually a lot more fun. Getting some power and really challenging yourself in the weight room, that's fun. Well, guess what? We've learned that actually that is what we should be doing. Because as distance runners, we're engaging mostly our slow twitch muscle fibers, and we're plodding along, and we're not moving very fast or powerfully unless we're at the end of the race or doing a hard, fast workout. The majority of our running is easy, as it should be. It's aerobic, easy running. Probably, as Matt Fitzgerald would say, 80% of our running is nice and easy, and 20% is a little bit harder. So in the weight room these days at the pro level, and we at Hoka NAZ Elite, we have professional strength and conditioning coaches that write our strength program. It's actually pretty intense. They lift their legs, they deadlift, they try to lift more and more over time. They're not doing all these super lightweight, tons of reps kind of things. They're actually lifting really powerfully because, yes, part of lifting is to prevent injury, for sure, strengthening all the muscle groups, making sure that our muscles and tendons and ligaments are strong so they don't get hurt. But we also want those muscles and tendons and ligaments to be powerful so we can move fast. We improve our running in the weight room. And that's what I said at the top, right? If you want to improve, regardless of your time, regardless of your ability, strength training can help you improve. So if we can agree on that, then why wouldn't you want to strength train regardless of your ability level? If you want to improve, it's a great way to improve. The only caveat is you do have to be careful. You have to be careful. I would really suggest if you have the means to hire a professional strength and conditioning coach of some kind, particularly one that works with runners, so that he or she can build out a program for you and your specific biomechanical needs and your specific goals as it relates to running. Weight training that you would do for a 100-mile trail race is different than weight training you would do for a 1-mile race on the track. And so the strength coach needs to know those things, needs to know about those goals so that they can write you a proper program. But yes, pros do strength. Yes, you should too.
So I want to, before we move on to stretching, I have a comment, just kind of a thought that came to me about the strength. Yes, when we're out there on a long run, there's a lot of endurance and primarily the slow twitch muscle fibers. Is that right?
Yes.
And then when we're strength training, we're working on the faster twitch, the more powerful muscle. Well, there are times, even though we're in a long trail running event, where we need to step up a big step, a big rock, we may be fatigued towards the front, at the top of the hill. We need some strength at that point. We still reach in to some of those fast twitch muscle fibers that are going to be helpful for us at that point. Is there any truth to that, or am I just making things up?
There's no question there's truth to that. And look, I get the privilege and the honor of seeing some of the top ultra runners in the world who train here in Flagstaff, and they hit the weight room. We all have to be athletes, not just runners. And in fact, you make a great point about ultra running or trail running, because I think you need to be more athletic in that sphere than you do road running or track running, because you have to be able to engage your stabilizer muscles. You have to cut back and forth. I mean, you have lateral movement that's involved, all kinds of things that are involved in trail running that are not involved in road or track running. And so I would say that the weight room, if I had to rank it, it's even more important for trail runners.
Yeah, we've seen some YouTube clips we all have as we go out there searching around of some of these elite trail runners that are hammering down some of these hills that are doing some incredible strength moves, lateral moves, short steps, long steps. They're contorting their bodies in different directions to just accelerate and move. It's a thing of beauty if you're watching it. And you've got to be strong.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yep. Okay, should we talk stretching?
Yeah. What about stretching? You know, there's different schools of thought out there. You know, maybe we don't need to stretch as much as you see the track and field people out there on the infield doing, and some say that maybe we should.
Well, it's all about what you mean by stretching. You know, I think it gets into semantics, but these days when we say stretching, we're really talking about dynamic stretching, or what you might call activation. Gone are the days of reaching down and touching your toes and holding it for 30 seconds like we did in the 50s in gym class or whatever.
Tell me about it, Ben. Mm-hmm. I haven't done that for years for exactly that reason.
No, those things we realized aren't as good, aren't ideal. What is good is you're trying to – because look, when you say – the reason stretching isn't even the greatest word is you're imagining stretching out your muscles. You can't see me on the podcast, but stretching out your muscles as far as you can. And really, we want our muscles to be snappy.
Yeah.
You don't want a rubber band. If you're thinking of your muscles as rubber bands, you don't want that super stretched out rubber band that doesn't snap back. You want that nice, fresh rubber band that if you pull it, boom, it snaps right back. That's the kind of analogy, you know, you need to be thinking of with your muscles, right? And so it doesn't make sense to hold a stretch for a super long period of time and stretch that rubber band out. What makes more sense is these dynamic stretching movements or these activation movements where you're, let's say, swinging your leg from side to side, back and forth, where you are maybe using a rope and pulling the hamstring back, pulling it back out, pulling it back, pulling it back out, instead of holding it like we used to. It's really just that idea that we're trying to engage during our dynamic stretching routine, our activation routine, all the major muscle groups that we're about to use. So think about this day and age. We spend so much time sitting down looking at our computers, just like we're doing right now. So our hip flexor just sits there unused. Our glutes are just sitting there unused, not being activated, our calves, etc. So all these dynamic movements that you see oftentimes pros doing before they work out hard, before they race, even just before they go on a run, it's all designed to just wake those muscles up, get them firing so that when you start running, they're working properly. And I joke with Mike Smith. He's the NAU coach, very famous coach here in Flagstaff, coached many national championship teams. We say, so wait a minute, you're telling me that if just for 5 or 10 minutes, I could do some of these very easy little dynamic movements and I'd be less likely to get injured? Okay, well, I think I should probably do that. I mean, it's only 5 or 10 minutes. And so, yeah, looking up some of these things online, YouTube, as you say, doing your reading, we certainly mention these in the book. Matt goes pretty extensively into some of these types of movements, and we even have some pictures and things in the book. But I think they're super vital. We've kind of come to learn that over the years. It's really important.
Coach Ben, can you clarify for me between slow stretch, dynamic stretch, and ballistic stretch? For my definition, what I was thinking, as I heard you explain the dynamic stretch, I thought, oh no, I hope that he's not talking about a ballistic stretch, because I've always at least learned and warned that ballistic stretches are bouncy type stretches that you end up doing them aggressively and can end up with a tear, and you need to be cautioned about ballistic. So just for the listeners that are thinking, I thought it'd be great if we could somehow put some definition to those so that we stay in a safe zone.
No, exactly. So. Like I said, slow stretch, let's get rid of it. Ballistic stretching isn't really my bag. It's not really something we do. So here at Hoka NAZ Elite, so we do dynamic stretching. Dynamic stretching is that movement-based stretching that I mentioned, things like leg swings, et cetera. But ballistic stretching is going beyond that, I guess what you would call normal range of motion. In some ways, you're actually trying to get that same idea of that slow stretching where you're trying to go as far as you possibly can, but then you're bouncing back.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not what we do. All we're trying to do is, like I said before, we're just trying to activate the major muscle groups. We're not trying to become gymnasts. That's the best way to describe it. We're runners.
Yeah.
We don't need to do the splits.
Yep.
We just need to make sure that our muscles are firing.
Good. Thank you for that.
What about timing? When should we be doing these stretches? I've heard, you know, you get out of your car at the trailhead and you do the 5 or 10 minutes of stretching. Some people say go and do a really easy first 10 minutes or first mile and then stop somewhere and do some stretching after your muscles have warmed up. What is your suggestion?
I think before a harder session, it's a little bit of both. So before a harder run where you're going to be moving pretty quick, I think it's good to do the 5 or 10 minutes of activation, do the 10 to 20 minutes easy jogging, come back, do a few more dynamic movements, include some more form drill type activities where you're actually moving and running a little bit and doing some high knees, some butt kicks, some things that test the muscles out a little bit more than just the dynamic movements, and fire up those fast twitch fibers. And then you go do your workout or your hard run. I think for an easy run, the 5 or 10 minutes of activation beforehand is probably enough, as long as you ease into the run very smoothly. I think then you can just go on your way. That's how we do it.
Ben has shared with us 5 things we can do to run like a pro, but I want to give you an inside how to run like a trail runner, and that's to use Lakey poles. I just love them, Scott.
We did an episode, one of our training principles episodes 2 weeks ago on poles, and we had some really good people, coaches, that came on and told us how to use poles and how to be a better runner with poles. And Lakey is the leader in the industry. They have the best poles that you can buy.
I'm going to give you 3 tips why I love running with poles. Are you ready, Scott?
Ready.
You know how we talk about counting steps? You run 25, you walk 25. I love counting with the poles. A set of 10 on my right hand, counting them and clicking them off, an easy way to count. Number 2, on some of these long runs, the 200-mile stuff, you've got to lay down. I've used them as a pillow. You know what? If you run long enough, they're comfortable. And number 3, if you're not sure when you wake up which direction to go, you always point the pole in the direction you need to go. I ran backwards one time. Lakey poles helped me run the right direction.
Let me tell you one thing that I love about the Lakey poles, and that is the Trigger Shark grip. They transfer the power from your arms and your hands to the ground. That's the Trigger Shark grip. Only Lakey has it, and you can have it by going to Lakey.com or, of course, go to our deals page at TrailRunnerNation.com and click on the Lakey banner.
Now, back to the show.
We've talked about sleep, nutrition, stretch and strength training, and now we're going to move on to the trail. And we're lacing up the shoes. What are some things that we should do or know about that maybe we're doing wrong, that the pros are doing, that can make us better runners, even as amateur runners? It's never too late, right, Ben? Even someone that's been out there for 20 years, there's still room for improvement. At least I hope.
Yes, there certainly is. There certainly is. Well, the first one is probably the most common mistake. And I feel like I've said this on a lot of different podcasts and everybody hears it, but I think it's worth saying again because we still don't seem to get it through our thick skulls, right? And I include myself in this sometimes. We've got to take our easy days easy. You know, I think for trail runners as well, you know, there's that tendency to always want to kind of hurt a little bit. And so we feel like we're not accomplishing anything physiologically if we don't push ourselves just a little bit. And the problem is if we push ourselves a little bit all the time, then we can't push ourselves really far some of the time. And I think what we've learned about training over the years is in the lab and anecdotally is that if we can keep those easy days really easy, then we can push our hard days really hard. And there's huge gains to be made on those days. And we talk about this in the book pretty extensively. This is something Matt talks about extensively in his writing, in his coaching, etc. And that's just that, again, I mentioned it earlier, that 80-20 method. 80% of the running pros do is easy. And 80% of the running we do as amateurs should be easy. And then 20% of it should be hard instead of 50-50 or even I think some people do it almost the other way. You know, 80% of everything they do is kind of medium hard. And then sometimes they're just really tired and they have to take it easy. We really need to flip that and be doing the majority of our running at a very easy pace, very conversational pace. And then we can push those hard days.
It's hard to have hard without a little easy.
Yep.
If you go out there and do a bunch of medium hard, it's hard to go out there and reach for any more because you're just always recovering from your medium hards. You need to have the easies so you get excited about getting out there and going after it. You've got to have that easy. And I'm guilty of just running in that zone where it's right there in medium hard. So heck, I never want to go any harder than that because I'm always recovering or just fatigued.
Well, Matt talks in the book a little bit and certainly he's talked on podcasts and he has a whole another book called Running the Dream that was about his experiences when he came here to Flagstaff and actually trained with our team for 4 months to get ready for the Chicago Marathon. And he couldn't believe how slow the pros ran on their easy days. It was kind of a light bulb moment for him seeing it up close and personal. Oh, wow. They really do run easy on their easy days. They're not just saying that. And I think it's very important. And, you know, it applies in the ultra trail world as well. You can't expect to go out and do a whole weekend's worth of super, super long running without having taken the proper amount of easy days during the week to prepare for that. I think this is very much a universal concept.
I can't remember where I saw it. It was a video of Eliud Kipchoge on an easy run. And I was blown away at how slow he was running. Now, he's probably still running like a 5-minute mile.
No, I bet not.
He was running very, very slow. And the video was explaining just your principle that a lot of his running is at this pace. So that, again, it's a paradigm shift where, you know, during a training cycle, you have most of your runs are moderate to hard and you have recovery days. It should be flip-flopped, right?
Most of your runs should be easy.
And then you have your hard day, which is sprinkled in there, peppered in there, if you will.
Yeah, and I'll tell you two things that I'm thinking of. And the Matt does a great job of this in the book. That's why I like how we wrote the book. He really peppers you with the science of all of these topics where I give you anecdotal evidence. But the science is you are improving when you're running easy. Your heart, as a muscle, which it is a muscle, will grow, the left ventricle specifically, will grow and get more efficient just through aerobic easy running. And you will open up capillaries through aerobic easy running. Your mitochondria will get bigger through easy aerobic running. And when you think about those things all together, right, a stronger heart, a more efficient left ventricle, more capillaries bringing blood and thus oxygen to the muscles and into the at the cellular level, the mitochondria being bigger. That is all going to make you a better runner. So if we know that scientifically, and we know that those improvements are happening even when we run easy, hopefully that helps us understand that, oh, okay, I don't really need to be pushing. I don't need to be breathing hard to be getting the aerobic benefits of running. And then maybe that can put us at ease and allow us to run those easy days easy so that we can then run the hard days hard. And that's when we start improving our lactate threshold, our VO2 max, things like that, not to go super into the weeds.
Well, I'll tell you, if you were running a hill and you just kind of zoned out to try to get to the top and you missed that last 30 seconds, that is a rewind, a re-listen, because that's a paradigm shift. That is an absolute permission to run slower or to feel good about running slower, to know that you're making gains while running slower. You always don't have to push the envelope to become a better runner. You need to go do what you just said in that 30-second soundbite to re-listen to that. I should make that my ringtone. That is a good one. So here's what I want to talk about. We talk about easy days, we think we're running slower. And we think hard days, we think about running faster. But what if we changed the definition and we said easy days are short runs and hard days are long runs? Because that's something that we do more of you know, shorter distance, longer distance. And we think of a easy run as a shorter run and a hard run as a longer run. Does the same principle apply?
I think I'll say this, because it depends on your mileage, of course. You know, the higher mileage people are still getting in a pretty good amount of volume on their easy days. But a lower mileage person, yes. I mean, I think that we should think about ways to get more out of our hard days. And the easier our easy days, the more we can get out of our hard days. And one of the things that I've always espoused in coaching at all levels is you can run more repeats than you think on a hard workout day. So for example, in the book, I talk about, I give this back and forth between these two athletes I was coaching about 12 years ago now in St. Louis. One was pretty darn good college athlete, all Big 12 performer in the steeplechase, made it to NCAA cross country nationals, all these things. He'd gotten out of running for a couple of years, but he came back into it. He's very talented. The other was a guy who had never run a step in his life, admittedly not talented, a little bit overweight, to be quite frank, as he would tell you, and came in our store, the stores I used to own in St. Louis, because he had won a gift certificate and decided, okay, well, I might as well buy some shoes and I might as well start running. So I ended up coaching both of these guys as I got to know them. And I'm telling you, I gave them the same workouts. Now, they were different. Obviously, athlete A was doing these workouts much faster. You know, let's say, you know, he was doing 10 by 800 and 220 per 800, 440 mile pace. But athlete B was also doing 10 by 800. He was just doing them at a pace that was right for him. So maybe 320, a whole minute slower, right? But they were both doing the same amount of volume. I think that's another misnomer with the amateur runners. Oh, well, I can't run 10 times 800. I can only do 6. I bet you could do 10 if you did them a little bit slower. You know, and I think we always want to run them. We always just want to be hurting so bad. And what the pros are really good at is being comfortably uncomfortable. I think amateurs want to be completely uncomfortable, but you can do more work if you're comfortably uncomfortable. And that's actually a really good zone. That's probably, if you were just doing it by effort, that's probably the lactate threshold zone, that comfortably uncomfortable zone, a zone you could actually race at for a full 1 hour. That's a long time, 1 hour.
Wow.
But I think amateurs tend to want to do repeat workouts at a pace they could probably only hold for about 20 minutes in a race, maybe 30 minutes. But I encourage you to slow those harder sessions down a little bit so you can get more volume. You'll get more bang for your buck that way.
So when you're saying that our fast days or speed, that interval, we should be able to dial into that effort for a full hour, and then we can carve it back to whatever we're doing. But that's about the effort that you want us out there, something we could hold for an hour, honestly.
Yeah, so think about it this way. It's easiest to use males as an example, male professional athletes. Mm-hmm. They can run a half marathon in an hour, or pretty close to an hour. The best people in the world can run 57, 58 minutes. Very, very good people can run 1 hour, 101, 102. So let's just call it 1 hour for a half marathon. So a lot of the stuff they do when you hear them talk is, oh, I did repeats at half marathon pace. Okay. But what they're really saying physiologically is I did repeats at my 1 hour race pace. And we can all do that. We just have to look up what that is on a chart, you know. So for some of us, that's our 10K race pace. For some of us, it's our 15K race pace. Everybody's different. But that zone is a great zone to train in. It's an awesome zone to train in. You just have to be honest about yourself, about what it really is. And if you're being honest with yourself, you can probably get 6 to 10 miles worth of running at your 1 hour race pace in over the course of a workout, you know, taking breaks in between. And I would argue that that's better than doing 8 times 400 at your mile race pace. Not to say there's not a place for those workouts. There definitely is. And we talk about this in the book, balancing intensities, doing a lot of different intensities in your training. But I think that lactate threshold zone is probably the most bang for your buck.
Ben, let's go back to the second guy that you coach, the guy that came in and won the gift certificate. Let's call him Walter. how does Walter, and we have some Walters that are listening to the podcast, and they may not know what their 1 mile or their half marathon race pace is or what their 10K race pace is. How do you coach them if they don't know what that pace is? How hard should they be pushing?
Or they haven't worked up to it yet. Maybe that's on their schedule to get there someday.
Yeah. Well, when you're literally just getting started, like this guy was back in the day, you know, that 10 by 800 didn't come until he was ready to run a marathon. You know, that's when we were marathon training. And I think what comes first is just running, just going out and running. And at some point, signing up for a race, probably a 5K, doing that 5K, and then getting some data. You know, so what is my 5K race pace? Plugging that into a calculator. Okay, if I could run that for a 5K, I can probably run this for a 10K, and my half marathon goal should probably be X based on this 5K. And those charts are pretty good, and those calculators are pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then you can start to map out, okay, if this is my half marathon pace, then this is the pace that I could probably run for 1 hour. Let's call that my lactate threshold pace. Let's start doing my repeats at that pace. That's kind of the process. And I really do recommend that, because I'll tell you, the Walters out there, too often they sign up for a trail race or a half marathon or a marathon first time out instead of a 5K on the road. That's probably the best place to start. And I don't know why that is. I just think it's our human nature. We want the biggest challenge possible. But, you know, the unfortunate thing when we go for that super big challenge is sometimes we lose people. We lose those Walters because the challenge is too much. And they do it and they fail because they weren't really prepared. And it's not fun to fail. And then they give up. And so all of us that are sort of the gatekeepers, right? People like yourselves, myself, et cetera, we really should be encouraging them to start small so they get the bug and then they want to do more and then they want to do more. And it's safer and it's a more gradual process.
I was just having a conversation with a very experienced runner and coach this week. And she was telling me that for some reason, and we can all speculate on these reasons, we're maybe possibly responsible for this reason, that everybody for some reason that gets into trail running has this 100-mile distance as the pie in the sky, that's what they have to do. And a lot of times they jump from a 5K all the way to the 100-miler, and they don't take the time necessary to build up and spend a couple years doing the 10Ks or the half marathons or the marathon distance, then getting into the 50Ks and the 50-mile distances and really getting good at that and learning from that, and then venturing to the 100Ks or the 100-milers if that's what they want to do. But she was saying what she's seeing as a global trend is that everybody that you know, gets into this trail scene because of a book they read or a podcast that they listened to or whatever, that they want to go from 0 to 100 in 6 months. And you can get a training plan, couch to 100-miler, right? You can type that into Google and you can find a 6-month training plan to do that. It's not probably the smartest thing to do, is it, coach?
No, it's not. It's not. And that's, you know, in the road world, it's the marathon. You know, they sign up for the marathon and it's just way too far. And
yeah,
it's unfortunate because I don't think it's good for the body. You know, I don't think it's a healthy thing to do, and it leads to injury, and then we lose people. Again, I want everybody to run. I think running is wonderful. I think it's a lifelong sport. I think it's something that we can do, God willing, till the day we die. And, you know, if you're encouraging people to do something that has a high percentage of getting them hurt, you know, shame on you. I think you should be encouraging them to start slowly and gradually.
All right, Coach, like all good training sessions, let's do a bell lap here. We've got one more on the trail. Give us one more that we should be doing as amateur runners that the pro runners are doing.
Well, the last one on my list of top five was pacing, just getting better at pacing. And we kind of talked about it a second ago, or we were getting into it with the workouts, because that's where you learn. You learn on the workouts. So you set these workouts up for yourself, or you set them up for yourself where they're very structured. I'm going to run, you know, I'm going to go to my local high school track and I'm going to run 10 times 800 meters at, you know, 3 minutes and 30 seconds per 800. And when I do that, I'm going to think of 3:29 as being just as off as 3:31. Because I think as runners, we want to think that faster is better. but what we want to do is challenge ourselves to hit them exactly on, become a human metronome. And I say that even for trail runners, because you need to begin to learn your internal rhythms and sort of that internal clock. On the trails, even more, right? Because you don't have splits and you don't have these things. And so you might be thinking, well, why would I need to do that if I'm running on the trails where I don't have, you know, clocks and I don't have mile markers, et cetera? Well, it's even more important because you need to really understand your body. And when you do that very specific pace work, you can begin to understand what X pace feels like, what X plus Y feels like, what X minus Y feels like. And you can be really dialed in to where you're at a certain effort level. And that way, when you get out in a race, you don't even need to look at the mile markers or the splits because you know yourself so well. And the pros, they just become absolute machines when it comes to pacing, absolute machines. Stephanie Bruce, who I coach, who's won national titles, and she's one of the best marathoners in the country, in the U.S., yesterday, she's training for Boston, and we did this hilly tempo run. And Boston is so hilly, right? And you can't expect to hit the same split every time at Boston. But we do a ton of work where she does hit the same split every time. So yesterday on that run, I said, no looking at your watch, the whole tempo run. Just run it at marathon effort, and we'll see what it was afterward. And of course, she nailed it. You know, her miles weren't exactly the same because of the ups and downs, but overall, she was right on her marathon pace because over the years, she's mastered understanding her body and understanding her effort level through structured workouts. And so the last thing I would say is just really get good at pacing, knowing yourself. And look, what's the worst thing that can happen in a long trail race? A DNF, right? What's the number one cause of DNFs? Not pacing yourself correctly. So let's get better at pacing.
As I listen to you say that, it makes me think, you know, we need to learn to listen to our body, right? And what a great exercise. It's exercising, listening to the pace, which means not just trying to measure time, but what is the cadence of my feet? What's my respiration? How's my heart rate going? Whatever ache I have in my legs, and starting measuring all of that, taking all that information in, and then pinning a number to it, an effort number or a time number based on all the other input. That's what you're really running with. Maybe it's the wind in your face. Maybe that's one of the variables. So when you're learning to listen to these things helps us learn to listen to our body about hunger, about thirst, about mental attitude. You're learning to take in, you know, markers and bringing them into reality, into your race. So that's a great practice field, doing pace, learning to listen to everything to make pace.
That's right. It's the tangible and the intangible.
Love it.
Are you telling me I can't use the Dixie Chicks to help me with my pace?
Ben, if you only knew what it's like, your athletes, your professional athletes would have a hard time keeping up with Scott if the Dixie Chicks come on his playlist. It just does something to him.
I think it's I'm running away from them is what I'm doing. I'm running away and I need to get away in some fartlek speed.
Don't they have a song called Run? Ready to run?
That's right.
I know my Dixie Chicks.
I don't. I just want that for the record. I don't know what you two are talking about.
Hey, I think this has been a great discussion. I think, like anything, we can get overwhelmed. I mean, we talked about some really good topics here that the pros do to maximize their potential that we can integrate into our training to reach our potential. But realize we did an episode not too long ago about James Clear's book, Atomic Habits. And he told a story in there about the British cycling team. I think the guy's name, David Brailsforth, was the performance coach there. And all they worried about was this incremental change. If you have the five things that we talked about today, don't try to implement all of them and try to be perfect at all of them right away. That is a recipe for a disaster, and you're not going to be successful. Take one of these and try to be a little bit better today, a little bit better tomorrow. Take a month and work on your sleep. Take a month and work on running slower and do the incremental change, and then you're going to be successful. Don't beat yourself up. I mean, we are type A performers, and sometimes we want to flip the switch and be perfect at everything that we do. And I think that that's a recipe for failure.
Ben, thanks for taking the time not only to join us today, but sit down with your friend Matt and write this book for all of us to benefit. Because heck, we talked about five things, and we had a number of things we talked to Matt about coming from the same book. But in fact, there's even more in there. It's just rich information that's just waiting to be turned on every page. And so a very, very good book. And I would encourage people to check it out to become better and healthier runners.
Well, thank you, Don. Thank you, Scott. This was super fun.
The book, again, is called Run Like a Pro, Even If You're Slow. If you want to learn more about Ben and his elite team, it should be the NAZ professional team, not the elite team. You just told us that.
I know, but you know, once you make the name, you can't go back.
You can find them by going to the show notes and clicking on the link, or you can go to nazelite.com. We sure have enjoyed listening and reading from Matt some of the things that he's learned from going down there and spending 4 months training with you guys, and then you writing this book with him. So thank you very much. It gives us a little bit of hope for us amateur runners.
Now go out and run.
Sorry, do it again.
So go out and run.
Mas.
And now we've reached the end of the podcast, really the finish line, Scott, where we give high fives as we're coming through the big arch. And we're going to thank our executive producer and editor, Ryan Warr.
And our social media guru, Yana Gibalova.
And our website graphic engineer, Katie Burke.
We also want to thank the Patreon supporters. If you want to become one, you can go to our website, hit the Support Us tab, and you can sign up on our Patreon channel.
We have an exciting give back program, Scott, where last quarter we gave a $25 gift certificate to UCAN, and this quarter, $25 to Path Project. Spend it any way you want. Go to their website and go shopping.
We also want to thank our business Patreon member, Doug Crumley. Doug Crumley is a coach for your finances. He is a private wealth advisor with Crumley & Associates, which is a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Visit him at www.dougcrumleyjr.com.
Scott, we mentioned the deals page quite often. That's on our website, trailrunnernation.com. And we've made a lot of changes there, and we're really proud of it.
There's a lot of information there. Of course, there's the deals page where you can get all sorts of discounts on gear that we love and trust. We also have all of our other podcasts. We also have the Training Principles link. So we just started the Training Principles episodes at the beginning of this year. All those are kind of organized in one area. So if you're just getting into trail running and want to know the basics of where to start, go to the Training Principles tab. You can also sign up for our newsletter. We don't fill your mailbox full of junk every week or twice a week. Only when there's important things to happen, you'll also be notified when a new podcast hits the air.
So go to trailrunnernation.com.